in, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cups. Here's to this moment, it will never happen again.
This is Off Stage and On the Air, performance number 685. I am, as I always am, Lisa Sheps, and I am joined by guest host Andrea Nunez.
Howdy.
You're listening to us on KOOP HD1 HD3 Hornsby. We stream this live every single day at koop.org. Remember, if it's theater, it's on Off Stage and On the Air. Don't go away.
Hurry, hurry, step right up. The show's about to begin. Forget your troubles and raise your cup. Step right up.
It is Wednesday, September 7th, 2022. On the show today, we have Austin Shakespeare, and we're going to talk about their entire season. And then later on, we are going to play 21 Jump Street. 21 Chump Street by This American Life. And of course, Andrea and I will have a lovely discussion of the world of theater in New York, Austin, Boston, anywhere you can get lost in. Don't go away. Andrea Nunez.
Hello, hello.
Welcome to Offstage and On the Air.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, I'm not having you. You're working. You're co-hosting.
I'm doing this.
So you are doing this. So this is your first time co-hosting. Have you been on the radio before?
I've done a podcast for UT before, yes.
Okay, great. Well, I'm going to tell you, the thing about our radio station, our show, since I do my own engineering, if I have something to say, I just have to say it right out and loud so people see. I'm going to ask you to get closer to that microphone.
This close?
There you go. Awesome. So tell folks who you are.
My name is Andrea Nunez. I also go by Andy. I am a recent graduate of UT School of Theater and Dance. I am an avid actor, poet, and Vogue dancer in the ballroom scene currently.
I'm getting new information here. That's amazing.
Yes, I currently work with Lisa as a social media manager, and I also help with running her wonderful, gorgeous theater.
Yes, at Ground Floor Theater. Andrea is stepping in. Patty Neftiffin is out on vacation. So, and I, as my listeners may or may not know, because I don't think I've ever discussed it on this show, is I am acting in a show. I am performing in Max Lengert's new play called The Pact, produced by Jarrett Productions and directed by Will Douglas. We're in rehearsals. Will is just bossing me around. It's amazing. Well, welcome, Andrea. I should also tell folks that Ann Ciccolella here, co-host, extraordinaire, longtime family member here at Offstage and On the Air, is sitting here with us. Hi, Ann.
Thanks for having me on, and thanks for saying hi.
I'm thrilled. Well, we want you to, we want you to be part of the conversation moving forward as we go forward. So that little piece of music, did you recognize that singer?
Is it the new Funny Girl?
No, that's the record. There's no recording out of it
yet. I thought maybe, with all your connections.
Oh, yeah, no. But that would be an interesting... getting a Beanie Feldstein recording could be interesting. But that was Barbra Streisand doing Funny Girl from 1964.
Wow.
I know. I was just this big in 1964. And for those listening on the radio, I held my fingers about 4 inches apart. That was Barbra Streisand singing I'm the Greatest Star from Funny Girl. And I do that because the contentious Lea Michele has begun performances as Funny Girl on Broadway. Do either of you have any opinions about the whole Lea Michele thing? Or are you bored with it? Or do you care?
I care. I don't really know what the truth is.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, I'd venture to say that nobody really does, but to me, there's enough of one voice that one might make an opinion that's probably true.
Well, I watched Lea Michele growing up on Glee. And
you're a Gleek.
I'm a Gleek. I never finished the final season because reasons. But I do believe life imitates art. So Lea Michele, I think, parallels very much that of her diva character and wanting to steal the spotlight. And I know, like, her driving arc in the show is playing Fanny Bryce in Funny Girl.
Yes, true. It is art imitating life imitating art. True. And I will say, and I said it on here, before I really knew all the mishigas around her past, I watched the Spring Awakening documentary, and it's an amazing documentary. It's well worth watching. It's, I just suggest that to folks. So New York Times had an article that's written by Matt Stevens, who's someone I'm not terribly familiar with. The title of the article is To Mask or Not to Mask, Theaters and Concert Halls Face a Dilemma. And something I've been meaning to talk about on this show for a long time, and I just lost the name of the show. I'm going to find it. A show on Broadway has been, The Kite Runner, has been doing twice a week. They started with once a week, but then went to twice a week masked performances where the audience was required to wear masks every other time. It's optional. And what they discovered they did not originate this. Other companies have done it, but they were getting emails and notes and saying, if you're not require masks, I'm not coming. And then you had other people just saying, if you're requiring masks, I'm not coming. So they started doing this thing where they have specific productions that are masked, or specific performances.
It's like Carol Channing for a minute there.
God, it's so hard. Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. So I thought that was interesting. There were a couple of things in this article from the article, it says, quote, some patrons wrote in to say that they would never come to the theater again if it continued to require masks. Others said that they would stay indefinitely if masks were optional. But it's interesting. It's a conversation I've been meaning to have here. What is Austin Shakespeare? Do y'all, for your indoor things, are you requiring masks?
No, we're following the rules of where we're renting. Mm-hmm. So they're optional. I was actually curious about you in your ground floor theater. What would you say the percentage is of people wearing masks?
It's a low percentage, and it changes because we also follow the guidelines, and we're currently on the Austin thing. We're in very low. So what we do is we encourage masking, but we don't require it. When we were at medium and we were there for a while, we didn't require masks, but we strongly encouraged, and we all wore masks when we were there to set an example. Mm-hmm. What do you think, Andrea?
Well, when I performed productions at UT, it was such a hassle to get the actors tested like twice a week. So we required mask, like a high requirements level, whenever performances came, mm-hmm. just because, you know, it was high in my final semester.
Sure.
But I will say, whenever I've worn a mask at theatrical shows, I like showed so much reactions underneath the mask that I was, you know, without a mask on, I would be afraid to show just like my facial expressions that intensely. But I also found that at ground floor theater, watching shows and in the tropics without a mask, people like saw my reactions and they like noticed me as like almost part of a show too. So mask or no mask, I think it just depends about your individual preference for reactions.
Well, I think wearing a mask going in is something I'll do. Mm-hmm. And then once I'm in my seat then I may take it down and so on. That's what I did at ground floor.
Yeah, and it's an interesting thing, and there are nobody seems to have the same. It's not universal, and I don't know when it's. You know, I'm wondering if masks or partial masking is going to be part of my life for the future moving forward. Mm-hmm. Don't know. But I'm currently fond of not wearing masks. But I will tell you, as I've been rehearsing this show, we rehearse masked, and I like it because because I'm the queen of breaking character and nobody can see me laugh behind my mask. So I'm all for it for that. Have y'all looked at, there's another article in the New York Times, and we talked about this last week or the week before, this new 1776 production that Diana Paulus is doing. Are you not aware of it?
Oh, I'm aware it's happening. I don't know any details.
It just looks so amazing. And there's this large article in the Times about it. Here's a picture for those of us in the studio here to see the cast. And it is all female, non-binary, or trans. Wow. This was an interesting article because you look at that in light of Hamilton and other things, and you think one thing. But to really look at this... And some of the implications is really much bigger than it is on the surface. I will say that the original 1776, which was an all-white, mostly male cast, was in 1969. It ran for a little over 1,200 performances. This new one, is a roundabout theater production. It is directed not only by Diane Paulus, but also Jeffrey L. Page. And it's got new rock-infused arrangements, which I think is kind of exciting. And I already mentioned that it's all women, non-binary, and trans. But it was interesting. They were talking about the original, the 1960s version, and it wasn't meant to be a whitewashed version of history. And if you really look at it, it's got the whole section, which... the whole section at the end when they talk about Thomas Jefferson wanted to abolish slavery and then made the compromise to get rid of the abolition of slavery so that it could pass. And Diane Paulus in here in her quote said she wasn't aware of that fact, which, I mean, I was even taught that in school. But 1776, the musical, doesn't whitewash that at all. And there's some other issues in here where they were ahead of their time for the 60s, I think. But this one seems just really, really interesting. One little thing. At the Cool, Cool, Considerate Men is basically about, you know, white privilege and... land ownership and things like that. And they were invited, the cast was invited to perform at the Nixon White House, but they were asked to cut that song and they refused. Good for them. And then this is something I didn't know. It won the Tony that year. And do you know who it beat out? Hair. Surprised.
Wow.
Anyway.
It's probably a better show.
Maybe I liked Hair. But
I'm a huge Hair fan. That's my error. Uh-huh. I was at the Hair third birthday party as a New York University reporter.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
But, you know, it was written in Hoboken, which is my home. It's
New Jersey, folks.
New Jersey. Mm-hmm. Anyway, I just think the book and the music's probably more sophisticated.
Yeah, you're probably right. But I think that James Ratto and company would say, yeah, they agree. You know what I mean? Anyway, so the set is a Brechtian-influenced design, designed by, I don't see his name, they're doing it like a show within a show, where the actors show up in street clothes and then they perform.
Meta.
The show. Yeah. That's it, but it makes me want to see it. We played this on the show 2 weeks ago, the song Mama Look Sharp. Just one of my favorite songs from the show. It's about a young, I don't know whether they're Confederate or Union soldier. It was a Revolutionary War. So it was a soldier dying in the field saying, Mama, look sharp. Sung by a black woman has got a very different context now. And I think that's very interesting. So that's it, 1776. It's a darker rendition than we're used to. All right.
Cool.
I'm going to go on to the next one, which is Ars Nova. Ars Nova is a nonprofit theater in New York, and they do amazing work. They are probably best known for Natasha Pierre and the Great Comet of whatever year that was. Did you see that? Did either of you see that show,
yeah,
by the way?
One of our actors from Austin was in the original production.
Oh, my God. I thought that was an amazing show. In the Imperial Theater, you did not recognize it as a theater when you walked in.
I saw it when it was, you know, on one of those little streets off Broadway.
Oh, you saw it in the tent?
In the tent.
Oh, I would have loved to have seen it in the tent. Anyway, there was a lot of controversy around Ars Nova. You know, they had fights with the producers to get their rights to it. But they have instituted a name your price ticketing model, which I will say Ground Floor Theater has been doing forever. Theirs starts at $5 and that goes up in $5 increments. I wish we were as clever as they is. Their policy is called what's ours is yours, name your price.
Ours.
For Ars Nova.
Smart. That's so smart.
I know. I'm not nearly that smart. Their Broadway season, their off-Broadway season this year includes an original show called Hound Dog, which plays October 6th through November 5th, and the world premiere of Prey, and Prey is written in all lowercase with parentheses around it, March 9th through April 15th. But again, this is not a new policy, but I would say that it's probably new and innovative for New York City, especially, you know, with their rental prices are much higher than ours. I hope this catches on, because what we've discovered is that we're still getting on average a decent ticket price, and it really opens it up for everybody. And we get a lot of companies that are doing it for either like the first, they'll hold 10 tickets, or they'll do one performance. But making it accessible, financially accessible, you know, for the duration, I kind of like. What do you think about that, Anne?
I think it's great. I'm just getting ready to go to New York City, and it's a lot of money for those tickets. You know, I love paying anybody in Austin, but when you start to get, it used to be a $100 ticket was acceptable, and $125 and $130. And now we're going to $200 tickets. I just find that stunning. Yeah, now, obviously, really they're getting it, but.
And more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we need, and I remember, and I've talked about it on this show a lot, when Liza Minnelli's The Act came on Broadway in the either late 70s or the early 80s, the whole New York was up in arms because her ticket price was a whopping $20 and nobody could afford that. Yeah. I wish the video was on to see Andrea's face right there. What?
That was great. $20? That was great.
Yeah. Yeah. $20 was like super expensive back then. And there were protests outside the theater. How can someone have the gall to charge $20 to see a Broadway
$7.50. I remember Broadway ticket at that price.
So you're going to New York. What are you going to see?
Well, you know, I don't know yet, but what drew me, now we're talking about early December, so, but what drew me was Merrily We Roll Along.
Yeah.
Now that's going to, that is the ticket to get, but I hope some of my inside lines will help.
I'm sure you can. If you can't call me, I can work it out. I know people. Maybe that was, it was. Who's starring in Merrily? Do you remember?
Daniel Radcliffe.
Yes, yeah. And?
Don't remember.
And what's the woman's name? I'm trying to remember. This is what I was talking about earlier today. I can't remember her name. But she is. She will show up a little later on in the show. Last thing I want to talk about before we take our break is we already talked about this once before, but the Sweeney Todd production starring Josh Groban and Anna Lee Ashford has made itself official. Are you either of you a Sweeney Todd fan?
I love Sweeney Todd.
Well, musicals. I'm a Sondheim fan, so Sweeney Todd is just one of the best. I mean, it's not. I remember when it was proposed, and I was like, "He can't do Grand Guignol. This can't happen." And I went to the show. This you know, it's a bloody French motif.
Really, yes.
And when I went to see the show, I was just wowed. I mean, it's a spectacular
score. I didn't see it in its original run, but I did walk on stage. I forgot what theater it was, and I was there on the set, but I never saw it. I really want the camera, because Andrea was. I impressed you just then.
I'm thoroughly impressed. Wow.
Anyway, how do y'all feel about Josh Groban in that role?
I think it's going to be fine.
I do too.
He has amazing vocals.
Well, I agree with that, but I thought he was sort of like bubblegummy and stuff.
I think he's a little young for the role, but.
Yeah, I thought the same thing. And so is Anna Lee Ashford. But after seeing him in The Great Comet, I saw a little bit of his depth. So he's always been a Sweeney Todd fan. He named his dog Sweeney.
Right. He has dramatic depth. I can believe that.
Yep. Anyway, this production is directed by Tommy Kail. It's produced by Jeffrey Seller. Both of those two people are Hamilton alumnus. It's choreographed by Stephen Hoggett. The original show opened in 1979. And this one plays, it starts previews in end of February, February 26th, and opens March 26th. That's a whole month of previews. Wow. At the Lunt Fontaine. So that's it for this part of our of our
thank you,
show.
Lisa. Do you continue to do history, theater history, or have you dumped that?
I haven't dumped it, but
she used to do Today in Theater History.
We still do,
and that was like a fun thing for me.
We still do, except my source has gone away.
Oh.
So I used to really just lift it from playbill.com, and they don't do it anymore. So I lift what I can, but I don't have
you need a dramaturg from UT.
I do. Let's listen to the original Sweeney Todd, By the Sea, as we take our little break.
By the sea, Mr. Todd, that's the life I
can. We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air with me, Lisa, and...
Andrea Nunez.
And...
I want to say Andrea Nunez again.
Not so much.
And Chicaloa.
We just had a lovely conversation talking about what's going on. And of course, I did not get nearly where I wanted to with regards to the things that I wanted to talk about. You can see the things that we didn't talk about as well as the things that we did at offstageonair.com. That will post by tomorrow, but probably tonight.
I wonder
tonight.
What's there.
I don't know.
Let's
talk to our one and only in-person guest here on the show today.
My one and only.
You know, I don't know that show very well. My one and only. Offstage and On There, co-host, artistic director of Austin Shakespeare, and longtime
fan.
Austin theater icon. I'm not going to call you a fan.
Oh, no, I'm a fan.
Who is like one of the very first people I met here when
really?
You were working for Zach Theater, and you were very supportive of my project at the time, which was Play Theater Group.
Yeah.
But you're here to talk.
I still think of that space.
It was a fun space. And we had so many wonderful plans for it that didn't happen.
But then it happened in another way, another time, another place.
It did, and better, I think.
Good.
And with the right attitude.
Good.
So we're here to talk about Austin Shakespeare, and it's 2022-2023 season.
Yeah, don't you believe those numbers?
Yeah, it's an amazing. So what's give us the highlights, give us the whole thing.
Sure.
The microphone is yours, as
well.
Well, like
we're excited. I just find the fall to be, even if it's only going down to 94 degrees, it's still kind of thrilling, you know. So we're going to start off October 2nd. At the Parker Jazz Club. And we're going to be doing songs from really Billy Strayhorn and Duke Ellington.
Oh, amazing.
So my love was really Billy Strayhorn. But we thought, well, people don't really know that name, but they sure know Duke Ellington. So the story essentially is that Billy Strayhorn wrote many, many songs with and for Duke Ellington. And at that time, the band leader's name was always sort of on the, you know, the score when you got the... Mm-hmm. So some of these songs really are Billy Strayhorn songs that we know.
When you do these at Parker Jazz Club,
yeah.
Are you working with a band? And how big of a band?
Great question. Lisa, thank you.
You're welcome.
We did most of them just with piano. So originally it was more like songs from Cleo Lane and John Dankworth and a singer. This time was the first time we had a drummer and a bass. And that
makes a big difference, doesn't
it? God. It was like 400 times better. I mean, it just was like, wow. So we're doing it again with the Billy Strayhorn, Duke Ellington. And also that needs some of that pulse under it.
Wonderful. I could tell you that October 2nd is... somebody in this room's birthday.
Is it your birthday?
It is indeed.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, no, I don't celebrate it, so please don't do anything.
Okay.
but that sounds wonderful. Can you talk about any of the performers?
Yes. Well, I guess the one thing I wanted to say before I went on was this Billy Strayhorn thing, which is, so Billy Strayhorn was gay. He was a very small person, very short person, and he was very shy and quiet, but I dare say he was probably as much of a genius as Duke Ellington.
Sure.
So he has a famous song called Lush Life. And, you know, it talks about dives and, you know, it's kind of sad and slow. He wrote that when he was 16. Mm. So those kinds of things just, you know, as I did the research, blew my mind. But Pam Hart will be with us. Wonderful. And she couldn't do our last show because she's so busy. She has a company in town called Women in Jazz. So they do lots of stuff. And we're using her music director, Ryan Howard.
Oh, right.
And he's just wonderful. I just talked to him today. And Leslie Bunnell is going to be with us, which is be great. And new people, new. Mac McDonald and Terrence McDaniel are both going to be singing with them. So there are four wonderful singers. So we're really excited about that. And that sort of kicks us off in October. I'm now auditioning for Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, lovely.
So that's very interesting to see who's out there. You know, essentially, our shows, usually we cast maybe about 16 people and so on. But generally, about half of them are new to Austin or new to us.
Sure.
And half of them are people that have worked with us before. So we're really excited about
Jane
Austen.
And that's going to be done at the Rollins at the Long Center?
It is. We're back at the Long Center at the Rollins. We'll open in November and run through Thanksgiving weekend. We won't do it on Thanksgiving night, but we'll do a Wednesday performance and so on. So we're really excited about that. And then we'll be back in January. And we're at, I don't know if you've seen this space yet, Lisa, the KMFA.
I have not.
Studio.
I've been invited several times. I've not been able to get over there to see it yet, but I hear wonderful.
Yeah,
bands.
I really like it. So it's all acoustic. It's all wood. It's just beautiful. It seats comfortably at least 100 people.
Yep.
And we're going to be doing Master Harold and the Boys with the person I think is one of the greatest living playwrights, and that is Ethel Fugard. So he's a white South African and just spectacular. So Mark Puhey did it many years ago.
Well, I need to stop and talk about that because he did it out at Sam Bass.
He did.
Directed by, I forgot who directed it, but that was back in the days that I had my other theater.
Whitehead.
Yes, Dennis Whitehead. And I was going to transfer it to Play Theater Group.
Oh, wow.
And we had everything set up. And then shortly before we were going to go, I closed the theater. So we didn't do it.
Wow.
And Mark, that was the first time I ever saw Mark Puhey perform.
Long time ago.
And was blown away. I've never, you know, to that point, I had never seen anything better in Austin. It's just an amazing production.
Yes.
It was the first time I'd ever seen the piece.
Uh-huh.
I'll be there.
Good.
Yeah.
Good.
Is it a reading?
It's a staged reading, but it'll be fun. We will have a little dancing because the premise is that the two guys are learning ballroom dance.
Yeah.
And one of them is really good, one of them isn't so good. But we're looking forward to that. And amazing. We're going to do that for our weekend. We've been doing one-offs there, but we're going to try doing a number of performances to get more people to come and see the work. So, you know, I felt a little bad when I just said that Ethel Fugard is one of the greatest living playwrights because the other person we're doing is considered by most people the greatest living playwright, and that is Tom Stoppard. So I think he's fabulous. When they compare him to Shakespeare, I'm always like, oh, shit. But anyway, we're doing his play called The Real Thing.
Which I'm also looking forward to. Have not seen it. Was in New York when it played its original
run. Oh, wow, yeah.
Yeah, never got
takes
there.
Takes place in the 80s. It's about marriage and infidelity and relationships and
it's a three-hander,
flipping around.
Isn't it?
Oh, it's like six people.
Oh, I thought it was a three.
So Alex is like, oh, two people. Alex is our managing director, Alex Alford. And he was hoping for a small cast because that keeps the budget down. So I was like, no, there's a lot of coming and going. So we're really excited. And Lisa knows that we're doing our new Shakespeare birthday party at Pease Park.
Yes.
And that's on Shakespeare's birthday. April 23rd, and we'll be working on sonnets. And Helen Rain Messenger is doing some music for us.
Oh, wonderful.
So we're excited about that. And we'll be having a birthday cake. And it's outdoors and all that good stuff that you said you
Peace
liked.
Peace Park, they did such a good job renovating that park. And and Heath Riddles, who had a show here on Co-op Radio for a lot of years, Outcast, is now heading up Peace Conservancy and doing a great job.
Yeah, we're excited. Last but not least, I know Lisa is a big supporter of our Young Shakespeare program. So this is where we take teens ages 13 to 19 and have them treated as professionals. So they have the same rehearsal schedule. They perform over two weekends at a Richard Garriott Ducueux. That's his whole name now.
Oh, I did not know that. Okay.
Because he took his wife's name.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good for him.
At their Curtin Theater, which is a replica of the Globe outdoors. And we'll be doing Comedy of Errors. And my co-director, Nancy Ironman, wants to do it in a circus motif.
Oh, good.
So we thought that would be fun for the kids, but also fun for the designers, as you can imagine.
Well, you know, my one stint on Broadway was a show called Oh Brother, which was based on Comedy of Errors.
Yeah. Yep. I forgot about that. That's right. And people can learn more about it if they want to at austinshakespeare.org. And if they want to be notified of when tickets go on sale, for instance, they can be notified by giving us our email address and getting on our email list.
Awesome. That's an amazing season. It sounds like a lot of fun. I'm particularly, I'm thrilled about everything, but Master Harold and The Real Thing, really looking forward to. Mark Puhey. He's like butter. There's nothing he doesn't do that you just don't love.
He was our MC for our last cabaret, and we really had a lot of fun with him. He's been our board vice president for like 7 years or something, and he'll tell you. At a board meeting, you can rely on him to speak the truth.
Yes, he is. He is not shy, as I've as I've experienced him. I've never had the pleasure of working with him directly, but he has done several things at the theater.
Yeah,
I've known
him
obviously for
just
years.
That I saw. Yeah.
Well, that's amazing, and thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this stuff with us.
Thanks for having me.
I do want to learn more about Austin Shakespeare in general, but we don't have the time right now. So
because you're going to do something really exciting.
I am. We are. I'm going to get you back here, and we'll do an in-depth interview with you about the history of Austin Shakespeare and where you see it going in the future. Would you be willing to do that?
Oh, I'd love to. Thank you.
Yeah, I did that on the air, so you'd have to say yes.
To hear more.
Yes. Me too. Again, thanks for being on the show. You're welcome to stick around our little local section, which will be abbreviated. But that's coming up next. Whenever you come on with something relatively general, there's like a handful of show tunes that mention Shakespeare. Went a different way this time. This is a song called Shake from a musical called Harlem Song. Here it is.
Shake! Early in the morning, shake!
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and On the Air on KOOP 91.7 FM. We stream this puppy live on KOOP.org. Hi, all you web folks. Okay, you didn't answer back, so I'm just going to assume that you're there. And you got me, Lisa Sheps. We have Andrea Nunez and co-host extraordinaire Ann Ciccolella. Couple things really that we've been keeping pretty well abreast of all the local things going on around town, but I did want to mention a couple of things we haven't. Number one, there's a single performance, Color Arc Productions, Romeo and Katrina, which I'm really excited about. It's actually something we wanted to do. We wanted to explore doing at Ground Floor Theater, and Christine Wong, who wrote it, said no. She didn't say no. She had other plans for it. But it is a one-time, I believe it's a staged reading. It's still in development. It's created by Christine Wong, as I just said, along with Tyler Mabry. This one is directed by Marcus McWhorter at the Asian American Resource Center on Saturday, September 17th at 7 p.m. What else can I tell you about it? That's going to require going to a different page. So this is Romeo and Katrina is a musical set 4 years after Hurricane Katrina. It crosses the Mississippi River to bridge lovers from West Bank and East Bank, New Orleans. and it's Romeo Tran and Katrina Batiste, who's a dental student. And I believe it's a Romeo and Juliet story, but I'm not 100% sure. Not to drop any names, but she got some help and consultation from a very famous person, Brian Yorkie, along with Kat Ramsberg. And Brian Yorkie, as you know, is the composer that did Next to Normal. So that's pretty big. So once again, that's happening on September 17th, 7:30, I think I said, at the Austin Asian American Resource Center. For more information, Google Color Arc Productions. So where I pulled this off didn't have their website. So the other things that are ongoing. Well, before I do that, I wanted to talk about. Well, I'm going to do two things. First of all, I'm going to congratulate Jenny Larson Quinones, who is now the new artistic director over at Trinity Street Players.
Yay!
Jenny, people will know you, spent 9 years artistic director over at Salvage Vanguard, and now she's helming that theater, which is great. That's going to hopefully keep them going for a while, because we were afraid of that space. We didn't know what was going to happen there, but now I feel pretty confident that it's going to continue on. Speaking of staff, the Zach Theater has named a new managing director. Her name is Jamie Herlich McElwain. I know I'm mispronouncing that.
Welcome.
I know she listens to the show, so she'll correct me. Welcome to Zach Theater. So she's replacing Elizabeth
Chandler,
who was there since I think 2004, 2005, right after you left, right?
15 years, yeah.
So that's the beginning of a new era. She comes from Seattle, working in places like Seattle Rep and others. And she worked both in development and in management. So welcome. Ongoing things that we've talked about here, still playing, Edit Annie over at the Vortex opens this weekend. The Fantastics is happening at Trinity Street Theater by City Theater. The Virgin Trial, Alchemy Theater over at the Master George. We had them on last week, Texas Comedies and Murders and Moon Towers, which is just fun to say. Over at Ground Floor Theater, Bohemian Theatricals is doing Tick, Tick, Boom.
Tick, Tick, Boom.
Tick, Tick, Boom. And then Macbeth at the Archive opens tomorrow out at
Pioneer Farms.
Thank God you were here. And Anne's favorite part, today in theater history.
Really?
Yes, but it's not nearly as good as it used to be.
Be really obscure.
It's not anymore.
Norman Blumenstein would know it.
I know. So birthdays are Jerry Zaks, Michael Feinstein, Terry Chapin, Elia Kazan, or Elia Kazan. I never know how to pronounce it. And Michael Emerson. And then let me drop over to this other page to see if. I can't. It's not going there. Oh, well, never mind. There might be more, but I don't know it. Ted Chapin, J. Smith Cameron, who I don't know who that is, Diane Warren, Dewey Moss, Thomas Kane. Also on this day in 1960 was a revival of HMS Pinafore at the Phoenix Theater.
I remember the Phoenix.
Oh, do you? Where was it?
It was like Midtown. It was great.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Women Go On Forever opened 1927 at the Forest Theater.
Before my time.
Me too. At the Bijou, The Best Years opened in 1932.
The Bijou.
And of course, Diamond Lil opened in 1949. There's more. Mackinac opened in 1928. And in 1996, we're getting back into things that we might know, a little show called Rent closed.
Wow.
So that's that. I have got to run because we want to have time for our next piece. So we'll listen to a little bit of Take Me or Leave Me from Rent just to clear the palate before we see the next thing. We'll be right back.
Take me, baby, or leave.
We are back. You're listening to Offstage and on the Air on 91.7 FM KOOP. I've been here talking. We just spent a good time talking with Ann Ciccolella of Austin Shakespeare, and I'm just going to wave to her as she exits the studio and goes outside of our front door. And we've been having great conversations with Andrea Nunez. How have you been enjoying yourself so far?
I've been enjoying myself immensely. I'm learning so much.
Well, wonderful. I'm going to make this a really short intro. So This American Life, which I think we talked about before the show, you don't really listen to. Do you listen to it?
Well, I had a couple of my friends who I got into Hamilton. They showed me the YouTube video for this and they got obsessed with it.
Well, this is great. They did. So This American Life, which does usually just a pre-produced radio show, they did a live event in 2014 and they replayed it last Sunday, and it made me think. I'm an avid listener, so I heard it back in 2014. And then they decided to make a musical that is done on. It's done on video. You can actually download it. You can go to thisamericanlife.org and see it. And we're going to play a bit of it here. I will say to our podcast listeners, we are not going to play it there, but if you go to offstageonair.com or in the show notes, you will be able to get a link to see the This American Life one. We do not have the rights to reproduce it, but we can play it here on the radio. So we also probably won't get the whole thing because we jabbered on a little too long. So you're going to miss the very end of it. But I'm going to play as much as we can, and then you can catch the end by going to our website and getting the link to it on This American Life. So I'm just going to jump right in. Here it is.
I've always wondered what it would mean to try one of my radio stories as a musical. You know, I was taken to so many musicals.
What the heck did you do? What the heck did you do?
Okay, I am so sorry to do this, but we had to come out. You can listen to the end of it. Go to offstageonair.com. There'll be a link to the video, and you can just click on that link and watch the whole show. There's a lot more. I should say that Anthony Ramos, who was the lead in the movie In the Heights, and he was in Hamilton, was the lead role in that, and Lindsay Mendez played the female cop, and of course, Lin-Manuel Miranda, or as Ira Glass as Lin-Manuel Miranda. Anyway, we are actually past time. We have to give up the airwaves right now to John Hoffner.